Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Oh, yeah. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome to the show, Friday edition. Hour number two. We will talk with Teron Davenport like we do each and every Friday at 7:30. So that's coming up as the Titans have a huge game. Preds lose last night 6-3 in really ugly fashion. 5 power play goals allowed. Got pushed around a little bit. Don't go to extremes today, folks. It's not all deflections, and you can't explain away the victory and make excuses for the Nashville Predators, but it's also the sky isn't falling and the coaches are all need to be fired and fire David Poile and trade Pecorine. Like, none of that needs to happen either, so don't go to extremes. It's November in the NHL. There's a long way to go. They're not a good hockey team right now. They will get better. Let's see how that plays itself out. However, I've got a philosophical question for you, for SEC football fans. Mm-hmm. Because normally this time of year, And I'm not saying all this to, you know, brag on myself here. I'm saying this just because it's important context. Throughout my 15-year career covering college football, I've worked for a bunch of market leaders. Proud of my career at Athlon Sports and previously at Rivals.com, SiriusXM. I'm doing ESPN Radio now on Saturday nights. I've talked to a lot of fans from a lot of conferences, and it never fails this week when the SEC schedules Western Carolina, Samford, ETSU, Tennessee Martin, all these bad games in the SEC, they all just take exception. Every other conference in America, Pac-12 fans, Big Ten fans, Big 12, ACC, whatever, especially Big Ten fans, in particular your folk, mm-hmm. Derek, the Big Ten fans, which I'll be honest, I was raised in a Big Ten family. They all take exception to the SEC business practice of taking this week sort of off, scheduling cupcakes in November. I always say back to those fans, don't get angry at the SEC for doing what's best for the SEC. Get angry at your conference because they're not doing it too. The Big Ten could do this if they wanted to. The ACC, the Big 12, they could schedule a bunch of non-conference cupcakes in week 13 if they wanted to. They choose not to. That's on your conference. Don't get mad at the SEC. Here's my question, though, because I want to look at this discussion in a different way. I want to look at it through the SEC fans' eyes. It is good for your team, if you're an Alabama fan, for example, or an Auburn fan, that you get a break before your biggest game of the year. It's just smart business, right? It's good for your team. Yep. You get healthier. You can rest guys, and you get kind of a week off before you get this monstrosity of an Iron Bowl in the final week of the season. Mm-hmm. So it's good business. I don't like it at all. I don't think it's good for the fans. What I want to know about from SEC fans is, would you rather have the cupcake Western Carolina game before the Iron Bowl, knowing that it's a bad game that you don't want to watch? Like, how many SEC games do you want to watch this week?
Not many.
Maybe two?
UT and Missouri. But that's just because it's in our market.
And that's 2-5-5
implications.
Teams. Yeah, nationally nobody cares. And Georgia-Texas A&M is really good. But otherwise, it's garbage. There's no reason to watch SEC football this weekend. So what I want to know from SEC fans is, would you rather have the difficult, strenuous, a conference opponent that is a much better game to watch, mm-hmm. B, better for your resume, and more entertaining, or are you okay with, hey, we're going to play Western Carolina, win by 65, but it's going to make us healthier for Auburn?
Boy. That's a tough one.
Because I know what Big Ten fans think of it. They think it's a joke.
Yeah. My thing is, this late in the season, I think all games should be sort of like the NFL tries to do it, where conference games, division games are toward the end of the year, because they mean a lot. There's a huge...
Every team plays one in the final week of the season, right? Week 17.
There's huge implications on Titans playing the Texans twice in 3 weeks at the end of the year. But that's the NFL, and it's because everybody's playing everybody. I would love for that to be the case when it comes to all the conferences where...
Like the Florida Gators have played their entire SEC schedule. They don't have another... They're done.
I would love for all the conferences, the Power Five conferences... your last three games, two, three games need to be conference games.
Which then you got all these rivalry games, right? Kentucky, Louisville, Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Florida State.
But how exciting would those games be at the end? Like, you have three games that are exciting.
Yeah, well,
like, there's no cupcakes in there. Now, I mean, the team might be off that year, you know, in regards to their talent. They might not be as good, but it's still a rivalry. It's still a big game. It's still a division game. I would rather have that than a, you know, a UAB or a Western Illinois.
Western Carolina.
Western Carolina, yeah.
Marquise, you lived in Tuscaloosa for a long time. You went to school there. And they've done this for a long time, the week before the Iron Bowl, which, again, I would say is smart business because it's helping your team get most prepared for Auburn. That's smart business. It's not good for the fans, though. How do fans – are they pragmatic Alabama fans in Tuscaloosa? Maybe that's a dumb question. Are they totally acceptable and okay with the fact that this is a totally uninteresting week of football for them? Because they know it's good for their team against Auburn, or would you rather see, you know, I don't know, A&M or you know, Mississippi State, somebody decent that you would play in this week that would create more interest?
Well, to be honest with you, if I'm Alabama in this situation, knowing that Mac Jones, and obviously he had that good performance against Arkansas, but that it's Arkansas. Like, Western Kentucky destroyed Arkansas, and it didn't even look like a game. So I would prefer Alabama to have a tougher game this week.
It would help their resume this year.
It would not only just help their resume, but it'll help fans be a little bit more at ease with Mac Jones. And that's the issue of Alabama going against Auburn this year. And I think that this year would probably be the most uninspiring week of the Auburn-Alabama rivalry from Alabama perspective, because they feel like, you know, it's Mac Jones. We have to win this game in order to make a playoffs. Like, is it possible with this defense and the way they've been looking, and our defense looks a certain way and they're not as good as what we thought they would be?
But wouldn't the off week then help that? Like, that's kind of my question. Like, playing Western Carolina will help all of those things. It'll help Mac Jones. It'll help the defense get ready for Auburn.
I think playing competition helps more. And Nick Saban talks about this all the time. And you see it in every Alabama season, because once Alabama plays his resume, and I'm going to attack their resume, sometimes it is a little weak. Now, mind you, the Florida State season opener, that's a...
Well, it didn't work out.
It just didn't work out because DeAndre Francois was hurt.
Well, that was Alabama's fault.
But
they did break him.
Yeah, but then you want to have that competition, because Jalen didn't have anybody that year that he had to compete with. This is the same year I think they came into Vandy and destroyed Vandy. And it just, they were destroying people by all these points, and then all of a sudden they get to Auburn, who had a good team with Jared Stidham, and then they get to Mississippi State that almost beat them in Starkville. So then it was like, you know, I think we need tougher opponents early on in the season. It kind of a mixture of early and late in the season, so we can be able to be tested for Georgia and Clemson, because once you get past their resume, it's just like, you know, defenses get tougher, offenses get tougher, and then you're stuck wondering, you're stuck not filling in the holes that you needed for your team.
It is against your team's own best interest to put a big-time opponent, a tough game, in front of the Auburn game, if you're an Alabama fan. It is against your team's best interest. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I understand that, and that's the reason why there's a bye week before LSU, is that same reason.
But that's an actual bye week. Yeah. I'm talking, like, again, it would sort of be against your team's best interest. Again, like, Ohio State's got to play Michigan next week.
Yeah.
That's a huge game. Who are they playing this week? Penn State.
Yeah.
I mean, That's as big a 1-2 punch as any team will play in the country, right? Penn State at home at Michigan. That's brutal.
But meanwhile,
Alabama's playing. Right. That's what I'm saying. It's not good for Ohio State.
Yeah.
But it's good for the fans. It's good for college football. It's good for all of us watching. I would much rather be watching an Alabama game this week that is meaningful than an Alabama-Western Carolina game. But I know, I acknowledge in my head, I know that in the back of my head, that playing Western Carolina is what's best for Alabama probably, to get ready for the Auburn game, because it gives your team a week to rest. But it's not good for the sport. Like, I'm just curious if SEC fans are so pragmatic, because they acknowledge the bigger goal so much more than every other league. It's about the national championship, and that's it. And it's about beating Auburn and getting to the playoff, or you know, whatever, whoever team you're a fan of. I just think it's interesting to say, all right, what's going to help with TV? What's going to help with fan interest? What's going to help with, you know, what's better for the game? Good games. But it's not necessarily what's best for your team.
No, you might be right. But who wouldn't? It would help Alabama, I think, this year from the standpoint of their quarterback went down.
Yeah, it would.
People are questioning whether this Alabama team is as good as their record indicates. So if they are to play a tough opponent headed into the Auburn week, I think it bodes well. It bodes well for Penn State and Ohio State to play. It might not be good for Ohio State.
What if somebody gets hurt?
But it's good because then, you know, even in – because here's the scenario that Ohio State's in, not Penn State because they've already lost the game. Here's the scenario that Ohio State's in. Because of their last potential three games, they're all against top 15 opponents.
Most likely,
they can
yeah.
afford to lose a game and still be looked at as
only
they're
Michigan.
Still one of the top 14. Yeah, Michigan.
They can't lose Penn State because then they don't win the division.
Exactly. So. They can lose to Michigan or potentially lose in the championship
Ooh,
game.
But what if
because you're talking a 12-0 yeah, going into
yeah,
the championship game.
What if they lose to Minnesota, who's 12-1 also and becomes the Big Ten champ?
But you still keep yourself
with
in the conversation. You
yeah.
still have an argument.
Right.
Alabama. It doesn't help them that they play, you know, a cupcake and then Auburn. Because people are not going to give them, you know, they're not going to give them any credit.
Right. No, and it hurts your resume.
Exactly. It's going to hurt your resume.
But it may make your front seven a little healthier so,
yeah.
so that they're in a better position to play against Bo Nix next week. So, again, it's the do you want to see really good football and be entertained as a fan, or do you want your team to maybe be healthier and rested and more prepared for a tougher game?
I want competitive.
I'm with you. I'd much rather, as a fan of football, I'd much rather watch a
competitive
good football
yeah.
game.
But there's just, and then as a coach too, there's just way too many holes that you need to figure out on your team that you're not going to figure out playing the bottom feeders.
Oh, well,
of.
But you're game 11. You are who you are already at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not
trying. Out.
If you haven't figured out who your strong safety is at this point, you got bigger issues.
But
right?
but that plays in a part of injuries too, and obviously
linebackers.
You know, that plays a big part because let's say Raekwon Davis does not play against Auburn, then obviously if I'm trying out someone at his position, and all of a sudden this guy's playing against Western Carolina or something, I'm not learning about
that's
that
good,
guy.
Good practice reps.
It's good practice reps,
yeah.
But I mean. The talent level is going to be so much different
I
when you go against Auburn.
I think you're putting too much value on figuring out your roster in a good game. I think the focus of playing the good game is about creating entertainment, selling season tickets, adding value to your TV partners, all these other bigger picture things that make your conference more interesting on this week. Right now, no one around the country is going to watch SEC football this weekend because nobody
no,
cares.
You're right.
About it. Because and I'm not saying that they need it because again, the SEC does it on purpose. And to what I would say to Ohio State fans who are like, hey, we're playing two tough games, I'd say, well, you don't have to. That's on you, dude. Like, your league schedules that. Don't blame the
well,
SEC
here's,
for your scheduling.
Here's what's good for Ohio State right before we go to break is that because the SEC is not playing anyone, the whole world will be watching you.
Well,
the whole country
no,
will
yeah.
be watching you.
Yeah, no question about that.
So,
there's no question about that.
There
and,
you go.
And the Pac-12 teams, both Utah
yeah.
And Oregon are on the road this week. You got Texas and Baylor. Baylor's got a
mm-hmm.
Baylor still has a chance to work its way back into this conversation. So everyone's looking at everybody else, with the exception of Georgia hosting A&M. Essentially, there's no national interest in this conference. I'm just curious if SEC fans are okay with that. And I think there's a pushback. I think the reason attendance is down or whatever for this week is it's just crap games, and nobody wants to go and watch and pay attention to crap games, even if it is what's best for your team in that moment. So it's just. It's. I think they need to change it, but I don't know if they ever will. We'll see. All right. The Texans beat the Colts last night in a huge AFC South showdown. And Derek Mason, what we do when we go to break is generally we try to tease something. This is an industry secret here. We try to tease something so that you come back the next segment to hear what we have to say about a very interesting topic. And the Colts beat the Texans last night, Derek, and you have a tease.
Mm-hmm. There's. I'm watching the game. And if you lay everything out on the table, all these teams are just about even, but in two glaring areas. And this is what separates Indy and Houston from the Tennessee Titans.
And Derek will tell you about it when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Too legit. Too legit to quit. Too legit. Too legit to quit.
NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame shows. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 10 until 12:30 p.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stelman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. Prior to the Titans taking on the Jags, the NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, the studios we are in currently, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. All right, so the Colts last night fall to the Texans 20-17. Deshaun Watson, a couple of touchdowns to Nuke Hopkins, who just one of those touchdowns was just a spectacular catch down the sideline. Two long touchdown throws from Deshaun Watson wins the game. The Colts run the ball pretty well, and the Texans take a division lead, and that's really what matters last night in that game, which was a very, if you're watching the Preds, I hope you switched over and watched some of that game, because that was actually a really entertaining football game last night in the AFC South. Huge implications in the division race and all that. You took something else from that game.
Yeah, I did, because if you look at these two teams now, Indianapolis Colts offensive line, run from a run standpoint, I think the Titans can say, you know what, our run offense, I mean, our run blocking is just as good or equal to Indianapolis. Now, the pass blocking is something different, but from a run blocking standpoint, they run block just as well as anybody in the National Football League, meaning the Tennessee Titans, as well as the Indianapolis Colts. Houston has gotten better at that. You look at defensively, the Titans are, with the exception of the last two games, the Titans have been a really good defense. Indianapolis Colts.
Is there ever going to be a day where you come into the studio and turn your volume on your laptop off before the show starts?
Never. Okay. Because I don't expect videos to play, and then just all of a sudden when you go on ESPN, they just start playing. Yeah. But you look at Indy's defense. Their defense, for the most part, is pretty good. They still have some problems in the back end,
yeah,
but their defense is pretty good. Houston's defense, they play pretty good in spurts. The Titans, we know what they are defensively. There's two areas, because I think all three of them have really good running backs, tough running backs. But there's two areas that separates the Tennessee Titans, and the Indianapolis Colts and the Houston Texans from the Tennessee Titans. One is that Houston has Nuke Hopkins, which is,
a transcendent wide receiver.
The guy's just freaking awesome. DeAndre's just all, he catches everything. And the Indianapolis Colts have T.Y. Hilton. A healthy T.Y. Hilton is a top 10 receiver.
Yeah, he only had three catches last night.
But he's still battling injuries.
Right.
But you have two teams that have
a
top 10 wide receiver, a guy.
Yep.
Well, you look at the Titans, they're trying to develop that guy. They show it in spurts. Well, Houston and Indy, those guys don't show it in spurts. They show it all the time.
Every game.
They affect the game positive every game. Those two guys that I named, T.Y. and Hop, they affect the game in a positive way each time they're out there. The Titans is hit or miss, up and down, up and down.
All right, I'm sold. You got me on board.
So that's one. The second is, I'm watching this, and one of the guys didn't have a great game, but he managed the game fairly well, and he made some really nice passes toward the end. He's just slow as hell.
All that poor fourth down.
Yeah, exactly.
Jacoby, buddy.
I mean, goodness gracious.
He did run for a touchdown.
Yeah, he did.
With a lead blocker.
And then the other guy is just a superstar. He's just a transcendent quarterback. He's just a quarterback that can do anything on the field he wants to, basically. I'm talking, obviously, Deshaun Watson and Jacoby Brissett. Those two guys, along with those two receivers, is what separates Tennessee Titans from those two teams at the top.
You think Jacoby Brissett is that much better?
I think he is that much better under that system than what we've had thus far. I think that's what's going to separate them from the Titans, because we're still waiting on the shoe to drop with Tannehill. We're still saying eventually he's going to come back down to earth and he's going to play like he's played his career in Miami. He's going to be up and down. But you look at Deshaun Watson and you look at Jacoby Brissett, those guys are consistent. When I watch those two guys, I never worry about if they're going to make a mistake. I'm just thinking, don't let them make a big play. They're going to take over the game in a minute.
It's amazing. Like, how depressed does that make Titans fans to hear that the best prospect to come into the NFL in 20 years, Andrew Luck, leaves the team, and you still, as an organization, look at the Colts and go, God, how do we get a quarterback like theirs? They lost Andrew Luck.
With a transcendent quarterback.
With like weeks to go before the season started. And they are still significantly better than what the Titans are at quarterback right now. I think that's a depressing thought.
It is. And that's what I think ultimately.
I'm not ready to say transcendent for Jacoby Brissett.
I'm saying Deshaun Watson, yes. But I'm saying what Jacoby Brissett, he's much better. And I think we said this Luck retired. We said, whoa, hold on, Titan fans. Y'all must hadn't watched Jacoby Brissett play, because this kid can play. He's not Andrew Luck, but he's a damn good player.
I think we were pretty clear on this show.
And he has proven that. And that is what separates the Tennessee Titans right now from those two teams, is that they have stability. They believe in those two quarterbacks. Not to say that the Titans don't believe in Tannehill, but I think everyone is still waiting on the shoe to drop. No one's waiting on the shoe to drop with those two guys.
No, there's
they
certainly
have
not
full
Deshaun.
Confidence and faith that those two guys can get them to the playoffs.
I don't know what Jacoby Brissett's. I still have a question about Jacoby Brissett's upside. I think he's a really dependable player, to your point. I don't know what his upside is. I know what Deshaun Watson's upside is, which is Super Bowl championship. I think he's good enough to carry his team. If everything else falls in place, which I think it takes for everybody, even Aaron Rodgers and Brady and Brees have to have everything fall into place, right? You can't have a bad call from a referee to get to the Super Bowl if you're Drew Brees. And I'm not ready yet to go there with Jacoby Brissett. I still think he's sort of middle of the pack in the NFL, but maybe the upper half of the middle of the pack. But I'm not worried about a mistake from him. That's certainly true. So I here's my problem, though. My mind immediately goes to, all right, well, Jacoby Brissett's worth $15 million a year. If I can get that kind of value out of a quarterback, why am I going to pay $22, $24, $25 million a year for Teddy Bridgewater or
here's the thing.
Or Ryan Tannehill or whoever that's that
you
price
know,
tag.
You're absolutely you know what I mean? Right. Like, no, you're like absolutely
the,
right.
I guess the Colts just got a steal then, I guess.
You absolutely. Ballard did that deal quickly.
Brilliant.
Quickly he did that deal because he knew had he waited and Jacoby Brissett is having the season that he's having, that you're going to have to pay him more. So let's do the deal. Let's sweeten the pot for him without even knowing anything.
Right.
We know he can play, but we don't know what. Let's just sweeten the pot for him.
We don't want him to know that we know that he can play.
Let's just sweeten the pot for him. Here's $15 million this season and next season.
Yeah.
Who's going to say no to that? Nobody.
Most guys that think they're starters.
Yeah.
And he was kind of thrust into the job.
Exactly. So they sort of. He David Poyle'd everybody.
Yeah, Chris Ballard. That's,
yeah,
exactly.
Chris Ballard, David Poyle'd everybody. And he got a guy, a really good guy, for a cheaper price. I'm just looking at this, and if I see, if I take Deshaun Watson and put him on the Titans, obviously they are first in the division, I believe.
I would totally agree with that.
If I take Jacoby Brissett and put him in a Titans uniform, I think they are still compete. I think they are much better with Jacoby Brissett.
How many games
at
is he
quarterback?
Worth? Is he worth then, one game?
I think he's worth two games, two or three games. I think he is worth two
but
or three games.
Three games would make them 8-3 right now, or 8-2 right now. I don't think he's worth three games.
I think he's worth, from this standpoint, because the Titans, I think they figured out, because I think they were still trying to, you know, is Marcus the guy? Let's do some things and try to, you know, make sure he's the guy. Yeah, we're going to run Derrick Henry. But I think if they had Jacoby Brissett at the quarterback position, there wouldn't have been in this ambiguity on whether, you know, he's the guy or is Derrick Henry. I think it would have been, okay, we have a balance here. Now, let's go. I don't think they had a balance. I don't think they believed they had a balance.
Or stability, at least,
stability,
for sure.
Yeah.
Let's ask Teron Davenport what he thinks about that. So we'll do that when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Teron Davenport joining Derek Mason, Braden Gall here. And Teron, if Jacoby Brissett had been the quarterback for the Tennessee Titans from the word go in camp and it started every game, what is the difference in record for the Titans right now today from 5-5?
If you said Jacoby Brissett?
Yep. If Jacoby Brissett was locked in as the starter at the start of training camp and it started every game, how much better are they?
I think they win Actually, you know, I think they win the Colts game and the Bills game, quite frankly. So I would say, yeah, I would say that those five losses turn to three, so they'd be 7-3.
I was close. I said they'd be 8-2 with Jacoby Brissett. I just think, Teron, as I'm watching that game last night, going back and forth from that to the Preds, it was evident to me that if you just put everything out on the table, yeah, there's some give and take, but I think some things just kind of even out. You know, yeah, you got a good pass offense, good defense, da, 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 but I think everything with those three teams kind of even out. That's why the records are so close. But I think the two things that separate the Colts and the Texans from the Titans are, one, the receivers. I think T.Y.
Yeah.
And DeAndre are, when they're healthy, they're top 10 receivers, and they are playmakers. The Titans don't have that consistently right now. And then two is the quarterbacks. I just think Deshaun, to me, is a transcendent player. He shows me each week that he's getting better, and this guy is eventually he's going to win an MVP, and eventually he's going to win a Super Bowl. And Jacoby Brissett is just a guy that people just didn't realize how good he was. And he's proven to everybody that he is more than just a good and solid quarterback. He can lead a team to a damn good record and possibly make a run in the playoffs. I think that's what the two things to me that is what's separating the Titans and from those two teams that are above them.
Yeah, and I'm glad you gave Jacoby Brissett praise, because I think in reading some of the things I read this morning, there are some shots being taken at him, and I really don't think they lost the game because of him. You know, and then on top of that, you have to remember the guy's playing on a bad knee with a brace that literally inhibits him from being able to step into his throws at times. So I think it's just crazy that these people want to chastise him as a quarterback, and I think 100% he is a guy that can lead that team. I don't know about to a Super Bowl, but he can lead them on a playoff run. And it's just a shame that he's getting the unnecessary critique that he's getting.
Let's look at the Titans and Jags this weekend. Obviously, Teron, the game plan feels extremely obvious for both teams. Taylor Lewan was not in the game, obviously, when they gave up 9 sacks to Jacksonville early in the year. Gardner Minshew's not in the game. I don't know what weather looks like, but that could be different. But the game plan should be the same as it has been against Jacksonville for the better part of, you know, 5 years, right? Just make sure Derrick Henry gets featured. Don't turn the ball over, and continue to lean on the fact that you've owned this Jacksonville franchise for 20 years. The game plan should be obvious, right?
Yeah, I mean, it should be obvious, especially with Jacksonville giving up 134 on the ground per game. But I think there's other things that play into that. When you look at, it's a divisional game. It's a game where, you know, the Jaguars, they are very much aware of what Derrick Henry can do to them. He ran into the record books against them. So I think they're going to sell out to stop the run. When you had that safety, Ronnie Harrison, you know, beelining towards the line of scrimmage when there's a run play, I think you definitely need to pull it and go downtown at times. I think there are big plays to be had. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. The game plan should be featured Derrick Henry. I think it should be that every week, but they have to be able to play off of that. And one of the good things about this matchup is Jacksonville is allowing a league-high five explosive run plays, 40 yards or more. So this could be an opportunity to get Derrick Henry on track as far as back in gear and getting those explosive runs, because he only has one run of 40 yards or more this year.
Now, if Jacksonville can, because we know they had a good defensive line, but I think losing Jalen Ramsey does change the dynamics of what they want to do. But the corner that's in place of him has been playing fairly well. And A.J. Boye, he's a good player as well. But if for some reason Jacksonville makes the Tennessee Titans one-dimensional, meaning they bottle up Derrick Henry and Derrick Henry is not as effective as he has been, not just against the Jags, but most for the majority of the season, everybody, can the Titans beat Jacksonville throwing the football?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point about Herndon. He's actually a Vanderbilt guy, so he'll have somewhat of a homecoming. But I think the Titans can beat the Jaguars if they have to throw the football. And the matchup for me is Adam Humphries and DJ Hayden. And I think Hayden, you know, he's a former first-round pick. He's clearly not of that ilk anymore, but he still is a guy that they like to use as far as blitzing, you know, very similar to how DPs uses Logan Ryan. So I think just picking up the blitz in that situation and having Humphries replace where he came from when he blitzes, I think that could be a big difference. Adam Humphries, I frankly think, is going to be a factor for this team going down the stretch because the way he catches the ball as far as those shorter, move-the-chain type routes, it goes right with their complementary physical style football play that they want.
We know Doug Marrone, Teron, has talked a lot this week about how he wants to feature Leonard Fournette more and get the football to his guy more, and Foles threw the ball 47 times in his debut. That's certainly part of that was how the game played out against the Colts. They were trailing in the second half. But is that the strategy for Dean Pees is to force Nick Foles into making those decisions? We know he likes to make quick decisions, but is that what you do? You want Foles being featured in this, or do you like it if it gets into that low scoring where you're both sort of handing it off and taking your 3 yards in a cloud of dust?
Yeah, I think they want that physical style of football. But I mean, in talking to some of the guys in the secondary, they know that they're going to get shots. Why? Because Nick Foles, he likes to make sure that his receivers get opportunities. He's going to throw the ball to them even if they're covered. So not only are his receivers going to get a chance to make plays on the ball, the DBs are going to. And I know Kevin Byard is itching for another interception. He's kind of alluded to that. So I think it doesn't really matter to them how the game goes. It is a physical team, so obviously they're going to want that. But whatever happens, I think they'll be ready for it. And Nick Foles, you know, he's a quarterback that, like I said, he's going to take shots down the field. He likes to push the ball down the field. So watch out for Foles to DJ Chark.
Now, with the Titans having a week off, there might be some rust. Obviously, yeah. Jacksonville, you know, they didn't play well last week. And I think they want to get back to trying to feature Leonard Fournette. How do you think this game go? Do you think it will be one of those hard-fought battles and ultimately the Titans win, whether it be on a field goal or last drive of the game?
I actually had the Titans win it 27-17. I think it's going to be hard fought initially, but I think you're going to start seeing the Titans get into a groove and actually pull away in the third and fourth quarter. You know, I expect them to go to that four-minute offense, you know, in the beginning of the fourth quarter and just protect that lead and just keep feeding Derrick Henry. And, you know, I think that's going to produce good results. I mean, this is a Jaguars team. We saw last week they didn't tackle well, and we've seen before where they just quit, you know. So I think that's going to be kind of what the Titans are going to look to do as the game continues to go on. I think they're going to try to wear them down.
Teron Davenport, always a pleasure. ESPN, of course, you can catch him all over this platform as well as the podcast. Teron, thank you so much for your time, man. We do appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, and I definitely appreciate Marquise for the Bell Biv DeVoe voice and intro.
Hey, quickly, TD, do you think Derrick Henry gets to 1,300 yards this season? Just quickly. Because he's close. He's on pace.
He's on pace for more than that.
I think he gets to it. Yep. Okay. I think he gets to it.
There you go. Teron, thanks, man. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, you got it.
Teron Davenport, ESPN there. I want to ask you about adjustments because this Titans offensive line was eaten alive by Jacksonville the first time around. Things are different. There's a different left tackle. There's a different quarterback. Do they make adjustments? What does that first game mean to evaluating this game? I want to talk to you about that when we return right here on Morning Drive. Oh, you're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, and I gotta. We'll get to Miles Garrett in just a second. That's a great song.
One hit wonder.
These are all the songs. I know all these songs Marquise has played today.
Yeah, one hit wonder.
Real quickly, the Titans offensive line got just absolutely eaten alive against Jacksonville. Down in Jacksonville, was it week two, right? And it was rainy. Nick Foles had already hurt himself. He didn't play. Gardner Minshew played. They were down quickly because remember Adoree Jackson fumbled on a punt return on like the 7 yard line, gave them a touchdown lead. Gardner Minshew made a big play on the second drive, and then basically the defense shut down Jacksonville the rest of the way. Marcus Mariota and the offense were very good in the third quarter, and then in garbage time in the fourth quarter, kind of racked up some yards in meaningless spots. That's, again, remember, first drive of the third quarter, they went right down the field, and that's when Vrabel went for it on fourth and six instead of taking the field goal to maybe cut it to 11 and maybe keep him in the game. That was a questionable decision. But the real story of that game was nine sacks by the Jaguars' defensive line, in particular, Calais Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, now that Ryan Tannehill's the quarterback, who maybe makes quicker decisions, willing to throw the football down the field a little bit more, Taylor Lewan is now the left tackle. They have a full complement. He did not play in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still concerned about how the interior of the offensive line is going to block Calais Campbell. I don't know how that's going to work. But it is a different-looking matchup. There's no Jalen Ramsey on the field.
Yeah, you're right.
So what are the adjustments that are going to be made? Because the personnel does look very different than what it did in that particular first meeting.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the defensive efficiencies for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they have gone down the last four games. Cincinnati, the Jets, Texans, and Houston. Houston and Indianapolis, excuse me. Their defensive efficiency has gone down. Now, what does that mean? I mean, I don't know, because they're 2-2 in that span.
They gave up 480 yards rushing in the last two games.
Exactly. So
it's not good.
You know, can you link that to, you know, not having Jalen Ramsey and them having to change some things they do coverage wise, and then it changed some things up front? I don't know. But the first game, no Taylor Lewan.
He's also been somewhat of a liability at times.
And he hadn't been great since his, comeback. But he's gotten better the last couple of weeks, at least in their run blocking. They all have. So you're going against the team that their Achilles heel right now is stopping the run. I think it will be a different game, but for some reason, I think it still will be. Now, Teron said 27-17. I think it's more 17-20.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like 17-13.
Yeah, I think it's going to be still a hard-fought battle. Yeah. I think they're going to have to lean heavy on Derrick Henry to run the football. And when you do that, you eat up the clock. Derrick's going to have some explosive runs, I believe, but it's still going to eat up the clock, and it's still going to be, to me, it's going to cause then a low-scoring game. But I don't think it's going to be much different from the first meeting. I really don't, other than the score. I think the Titans win, but I don't think it's going to be any different from the first meeting. You know, the Titans gave up some quick two touchdowns quickly in the first meeting, and then kind of settled down.
Yeah, and it was basically even after
that. Exactly, it was even. Yeah. I think that's how this game is going to be.
I am fascinated with Nick Foles. I know I'm on record as saying I never believed in Nick Foles. I was never going to give him $88 million. Uh-huh. I thought $22 million a year was too much. I didn't think he was the answer. I know he won the Super Bowl and had that sort of, he caught fire. He's never really been good outside of Philadelphia. I know he's got his coordinator with John DeFilippo back, and maybe they're in a better situation. It just doesn't feel like the Jaguars mentally are in a place to against a team that has owned them psychologically for basically two decades. This doesn't feel like a good spot for them. But that's right when the Titans tend to let people down.
Yeah.
So
it when Blake Bortles was the quarterback, there was never a time where I thought Blake Bortles was going to take over the game, and he was going to explode, and he was going to be the reason that Jacksonville beat the Titans. I thought it would always be because of their defense if they did beat the Titans. But I think in this situation, I'm worried about Nick Foles exploding, having that game.
Well, and DJ Chark, at a LSU second-year player, I believe, at LSU, having a really, really good season. So you don't have your top cover corner either. That's another personnel difference, right? Is their quarterback's different and your secondary is not the same. So it's so different
from
the
first meeting. Both secondaries are different.
It's so different from the first meeting. I am very confident about how the Titans – I feel confident about how the Titans are going to play on Sunday. Who knows? That's why you play the games in the NFL. Make your picks now Of the three college football underdog teams that you think will win this Saturday, weekly winners will win a pair of tickets to the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl at Nissan Stadium on Monday, December 30th. Hit up thegamenashville.com or the ESPN The Game Nashville mobile app. That's right, streaming on the app. Play now. All about that option. Silly Underdog Picks is sponsored by Volunteer Hose and Gasket.
All about that option, boss.
All about that option, boss. All right, I got a quick... I just want to spend like 4 minutes on this because it's like the biggest story in sports and people can't shut up about it. And everyone... It's sort of like the you-know-what part of your body. Everyone's got one, right? Miles Garrett claims that Mason Rudolph used a racial slur. Mason Rudolph vehemently denies it. Here's my thing.
Is he say, he say. I hope.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Here's my you don't have to have a take on this. If you're a radio host, if you're a fan of football, if you're a human being, I understand that there are implications for Mason Rudolph's character here. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change the way I feel about Myles Garrett's reaction. I understand it more if it happens, mm-hmm. but you still shouldn't have done what you did. It's all bad, no matter what story is true. We are never going to actually know what actually happened. So why waste your time and energy and breath today talking about something that's not really going to have any impact on anyone's life outside of the two players? We can go down all the details of the story if you want to, Derek. Sometimes there are stories in sports where you just look at them and you go, what is the point? I don't, it's a he said, we're never going to know. We can argue round and round in circles if we want to, but where are we going to be at the end? We're going to be right back where we started. It's okay sometimes, occasionally, to just not have a take on something.
No, you're absolutely right. Here's, I guess, sort of my two cents on two things with this. One, we'll never know what Mason Rudolph said. And if he did say it, then do the reaction from Myles Garrett was the reaction. And, you know, if it was a racial slur, then... You know, people react different to it, so I can't say...
You can't swing a helmet at a guy's head, though.
I can't say what he did. But the fact remains that he did it, and he suspended.
Yeah.
So you got to live with it. You can say, well, he provoked me, and I can say, well, you know what? You're right, but still...
You can't do what
you did. Even if you're provoked, there has to be some consequences. Even if what you did was provoked, and I can't argue that, there still has to be a consequence to what you did.
Like, if I walked up to one of you guys on the street and used a racial slur towards you, that is not illegal.
Exactly.
It makes me
if I punch somebody because of that...
I can sue you.
That you could sue me.
Yeah.
Did I have every reason possibly? Yeah, but then I still got to deal with the consequences. Sure. It doesn't change that.
And what you do is you judge my character now,
exactly.
Right? Because you heard me do something
now,
that you don't approve
of. Now, the judge may go lenient or something. I don't know, but there's still a consequence to what I did. Here's the second problem. Not necessarily really a problem, but here's the second thing that I'm really upset with the NFL with. The whole Ponzi thing.
I'm okay with having that discussion.
I'm okay with the first punch or whatever you want to call it because he sees something and he's reacting. So I'm okay with when they're standing, you're tussling, your guy has him, you come in there late, boom, boom.
You don't like the kick.
I don't like when he's down.
Yeah.
And then you kick him and then you jump on him again. That right there took it from being one thing to another. The NFL should have left it at three games and went with that. What they're saying is it's okay for you to kick a player in the head and then jump on him.
Well, he's still suspended two games.
Yeah, but that, to me, they should have left it at three. Like, Ponzi, I understand when you – the initial coming in there and the initial
defending,
tussle.
Defending your quarterback. Yeah.
But once he's on the ground and you kick him and jump, now
agree.
You've changed the ball game.
And I think – listen,
so
I
that's the only problem I have.
And I understand that. I totally get that. I think the fact that he got suspended in the first place for his actions, I think, is a good statement towards that behavior that you're talking about. You knew that they were all going to try to appeal, though. Like, you knew that we said this on Friday. There's all going to be suspensions for this guy, and this guy. Then they're going to appeal them, and they're going to get reduced maybe or maybe not. And, we can debate whether or not Myles Garrett said anything about it too late and, you know, this week versus in the locker room. Why didn't it ever happen? Do we, you know, Mason Rudolph has said he's not going to talk about it, and he's basically saying absolutely not true. So somebody's lying here. Again, there's just, there are certain things in life. Like, I'm not suggesting that using racial slurs is a small thing. It's obviously a really terrible thing. But at the end of the day, this particular story, where are we going to get with this? Where are we going to? What are we going to learn? What problems are we going to solve? What are we going to? What's the end game for this discussion about round and round and round and round we go on he said, he said, he said, he said, and it's just not going to ever be resolved? I guess my advice is just say, you know what? The whole thing looks terrible. And you said something really interesting before the show.
ESPN.
Stop showing it.
Stop showing that crap. You're showing it over and over on a loop. Why? Everybody.
Because it sells, I guess?
Everybody, if you're not living under a rock and you enjoy sports and you're watching ESPN, you've seen this at least three times. Yeah. ESPN, stop showing it. It doesn't make any sense. Stop showing him swinging a helmet and hitting the guy. We know what he did. We know it was wrong. Yeah. We know it was violent. Stop it. I don't see any why.
Yeah. And you can sit here and say, oh, I think his explanation, Myles Garrett's explanation after the fact a week later to the NFL trying to get his suspension removed is hollow and transparent. You could say that, but he also might be telling the truth too. So like there's just no like
we are not we there, are never
there's
known.
No reason in wasting your time and your energy and your breath. If we have actual evidence of something, then we can have an intelligent discussion about what was done, who was appropriate, not appropriate. I still think no matter what was said, the actions of Myles Garrett are suspension worthy. You cannot have, like you're saying, Derek, the visual of an NFL player who's a monster slamming a helmet down on another player's uncovered head. It doesn't matter what he said. You can't have that.
It's not good for the game, NFL. Stop showing it, ESPN.
They're not equal things. Using a bad word, as much as I would then judge your character, Mason Rudolph, if that was true, it's not the same as swinging a helmet and assaulting a teammate, essentially, or an opposing player, essentially. So they're not equal things, and I don't know. I just don't think we're going to learn anything or get anywhere. So I would suggest to you in your life today, with your friends, your buddies, whatever, just don't talk about it. It's not important. Who cares?
Yeah, you're right.
Probably what we need to do with politics, right? Stop talking about it with each other. Maybe we'll get along
more. Leave it
alone. Maybe we'll get along more. Lee Sterling has all of your gambling advice for the weekend coming up when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.